Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Aadhar Housing Finance Limited Q4 and FY25 Analyst Conference Call hosted by JM Financial Institutional Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ajit Kumar from JM Financial. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Rutuja. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of JM Financial, I welcome everyone to 4Q FY25 Earnings Conference Call of Aadhar Housing Finance Limited. From the management team, we have with us today Mr. Devshankar Tripathi, Executive Vice Chairman, Mr. Rishi Anand, MD and CEO, Mr. Rajesh Viswanathan, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Sanjay Moolchandani, Head Financial Planning. We will start with opening remarks, and then we will open the floor for Q&A. I'll now hand over the call to MD and CEO, sir, for his opening remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you so much, Ajit. A very good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Aadhar Housing Finance, I extend a very warm welcome to all of you. This year has been a landmark in our journey, defined by strong performance. We are proud to announce that our AUM has reached an INR of 25,531 crores, representing a remarkable year-on-year growth of 21%. This outstanding milestone not only reflects our continued momentum but also reaffirms our leadership position in the affordable housing finance sector. We have consistently delivered a strong performance in every quarter while maintaining our position in the affordable housing finance industry. This sector has seen substantial growth this year with strong support from government and rise in demand for affordable housing. We believe affordable housing will continue to be the cornerstone of India's housing finance industry. Moving on to Aadhar's performance for the quarter and for the financial year ended 2025, we clocked an AUM of INR 25,531 crores, crossing a key milestone of 25,000 crores, a significant growth of 21% YOY. We continue to maintain our position as India's leading low-income housing finance provider. Disbursement stood strong at INR 8,192 crores, a growth of 16% YOY. Quarter four disbursement at 2,556 crores has shown a growth of 18% YOY and a growth of 21% YOY in quarter one PAT at 245 crores. While maintaining this growth momentum, we continue to focus on maintaining our book quality. Our portfolio continues to be entirely focused on retail secured loans with nil exposures to corporates and developers. Our GNPA has declined by 3 basis points to 1.05% on YOY basis, supported by a stable collection efficiency of 100% plus. Our average loan-to-value ratio is at 59%, majorly catering to the salaried segment constituting 56% of our portfolio, with an average ticket size of 10 lakhs. Home loans make up a substantial majority of the AUM, accounting for 74%, while non-home loans are the remaining 26%. Our deeper impact strategy has been instrumental in driving both meaningful outreach and operational efficiency. By focusing on high-potential underserved regions, particularly smaller districts and talukas, we have been able to scale our presence effectively while maintaining a lean operational structure. This has translated in aligning our long-term objectives of sustainable growth and prudent resource allocation. As highlighted in the last quarter, the strategy has not only strengthened our foothold in these target segments but also laid a strong foundation for our future expansion. On the geographical front, our geographical footprint has shown substantial growth over the past year, now spanning to 21 states and covering 545 districts, supported by a robust network of more than 580 branches. In FY25, we added 57 new branches, which has significantly enhanced our capacity to serve a wider customer base, which has now reached 2.99 lakh live customers. Another milestone we have achieved this quarter is our entry to the Northeast with its first branch in Guwahati, marking a pivotal step in our mission to provide home ownership accessible to the underserved communities. Our expansion to Guwahati aligns with NHB's vision of financial inclusion and government's Housing for All mission. Our portfolio remains well diversified, with no single state accounting for more than 14% of our total AUM. This balanced exposure underscores our prudent risk management approach while supporting our strategic goal of sustainable and inclusive growth. On technology front, we have led from start by leveraging a TCS-enabled core system to fully digitize our processes. We have implemented advanced data science solutions to streamline operations end-to-end. Over the past 4 years, we have focused on expanding data insights across teams, starting with basic reporting and evolving towards advanced analytical support for better decision-making. With this strong foundation in place, we are now moving towards deeper insights through AI and machine learning, unlocking smarter, more transformative outcomes. This shift will further enhance data quality, governance, and compliance. On the liability side, we continue to focus on our diversification strategy, and in the said quarter, we have explored ECB as an option. Rajesh will be speaking a little more about it. The affordable housing finance sector has witnessed a strong growth momentum in the recent quarters, attributed to urbanization and rising demand for housing loans, along with significant push given by the government. Union Budget 2025 provides a strong boost to the affordable housing finance sector through measures that directly benefit institutions like us. Key initiatives such as reduced personal income tax rates, enhanced funding for Pradhan Mantri Awas Yojana, revival of the interest rate subsidy scheme, credit guarantee program, and allocation to the Swami Fund are designed to increase home loan accessibility and affordability for low and middle income groups. To conclude, I would like to emphasize that Aadhar Housing Finance stands well positioned to continue its growth journey, backed by a strong operational foundation, expanding footprint and robust technology infrastructure. With supportive government policies, rising demand for affordable housing, and our commitment to the financial inclusion, we are confident in sustaining our leadership in the sector. As we move forward, we remain focused on delivering value to our stakeholders while deepening our impact in underserved communities. I would now like to hand over to our CFO, Rajesh Viswanathan, to take you through the financial performance of the quarter and the year.
Thank you, Rishi, and good evening, everyone. I would like to take you through the financial performance of Q4 FY25 and full year 2025. As we exited FY25, our AUM has grown by 21% on a YOY basis, and as Rishi said, we have crossed the mark of 25,000 crores and we are the first low-income housing finance company to do so. Our overall borrowings as at 31st of March 2025 stood at 16,388 crores compared to 13,960 as at 31st March 2024. The borrowings has grown 17% on a YOY basis. The borrowing mix as at 31st March 2025 is 53% from banks, NHB share is 23%, NCD share is 21%, and as Rishi said, we have done our first ECB issuance, and the ECB share is 3%. The ECB that we did was for USD 50 million. We did it in quarter 4 FY25, and this is a fully hedged transaction that we have carried out. This is carried out at a SOFR plus 156 VIPs, and the full all-in hedged cost comes in around 8.1%. Our incremental borrowings for FY25 stood at 5024 crores. We have around 43 borrowing relationship among National Housing Bank, banks, housing finance banks, mutual funds, and DFIs. We have drawn 1,100 crores from NHB in FY25, of which the affordable housing funds share is around 16%. The blended cost at which the 1,100 crores was borrowed was around 7.9%. The overall exit cost of funds at FY25 stood at 8.2%. In terms of fixed and floating nature, 79% of our borrowings is floating and 76% of our assets are floating. Undrawn sanctions as at 31st March 2025 is 891 crores. Liquidity as at the end of the year stood at 2,200 crores, which is about 10.7% of the loan book. Portfolio yield for the full year as we exited was about 13.9%. In terms of spread, as we have exited at a spread of 5.7% is what we had also highlighted in our previous calls. Our cost to income ratio for FY25 stood at 36.4% as compared to 37.5% in FY24. As we had mentioned in our earlier calls, we were looking at reducing our cost to income in the full year on 80 to 100 bips, and we have shown improvement of 104 bips. Further, as you would note, there is a movement in the overall OPEX in quarter four as compared to quarter three. But as we had indicated in prior calls, what we have done is we have tried to spread the OPEX to a great extent among quarter three and quarter four to ensure that there is no lumping up in quarter four. This was, as you would remember, had happened in last year quarter four. Compared to that, in this year, the OPEX, which is basically the contest which we run from periods of November to March, is spread over two quarters. GNPA as at 31st of March is 1.05%, and this is one of the best performances in terms of GNPA in the last 3 to 4 years that the company has demonstrated. There is an improvement of 3 bips of GNPA on an AUM basis. The provision coverage ratio on stage 3 currently stands at 34.5%. Capital adequacy ratio for FY25 is 44.1%, and tier 1 and tier 2 is 0.5%. For FY25, the overall full year PAT came in at 912 crores compared to 750 crores in FY24. Overall growth is 22%. PAT for quarter 4 FY25 stood at 245 crores versus 202 crores in quarter 4 FY24, which is a growth of 21% on a YOY basis. We are focusing on maintaining a healthy book and delivering consistent performance on a quarterly basis. With that, we can open up for questions.
Thank you very much. We would now like to open the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Renish from ICICI. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congrats on a good set of numbers. So just two things. One on this asset yield. So, so typically in a falling rate cycle, there are two, three moving parts. One of those is the BT out rate, then the PLR change, and also the competitive pressure, because generally, the prime housing loans will get repriced lower and lower in line with the repo rate cut. So if we look at our yields in Q4 exit, how do you see yields are settling, let's say, over next 2 to 3 quarters, considering all these 2-3 moving parts?
I think, Ranish, if you look at our overall book yields, it has been quite consistent on a quarterly basis for the last 3 quarters. And as we had said, the full year yields are around 30 bips lower than the book yield. So in quarter four also, we have been quite good at managing to get incremental yields of around 13.5 to 13.55%, which is quite similar to what we had in quarter three. Yes, BT, as you correctly said, some of the prime housing finance companies obviously do a lot of aggressive BT in the quarter four, and the BT out rate, as we exited the year, we had a 6.5% BT out, which was a drop from 6.9% in quarter four of last financial year. So to that extent, some of the steps that we had taken on BT out is something that has helped us to stem the BT route to by about 50 bips on a quarter-on-quarter basis.
No, but I mean, let's say in a scenario where, there could be higher BT out rates going ahead, And in order to sustain 20% plus growth, you know, obviously we have to get into the price war. So in that scenario, I mean, how comfortable or confident we are that we'll be able to sustain this disbursement yield of 13.5%?
So Renish, I can come in here, Rishi here. So Renish, as Rajesh said, you know, we have taken multiple steps already with a central retention team in place. Multiple other measures with respect to data analytics pulling in into the retention team. So all those measures have been taken and we can see initial results that 6.9 to closer to 7% falling to about 6.5. Vision is to take it to an annualized number of 6%. What we have also interestingly done is, and you're right in the way you're looking at it, what we have done is to protect ourselves, we have now divided the country into something. And that's effective this financial year, but I don't mind speaking about it right now, into urban and emerging locations. So, you know, the top, I would say, 15 cities, which will contribute about 100 branches of ours, is now urban, which contributes to my top line. And then in emerging, we have three categories of branches, which is typically about 400 odd branches. So emerging A, B, and C. And the strategies for urban and emerging ABCs for all four kinds of different locations is completely different. When I say strategy, I mean the ticket size, I mean the yield, I mean, you know, the BT out strategy, the branch strategies, all the strategies for every branch category is different. Illustratively, let's say emerging C location, which will be typically a tier 4, tier 5 location. I have a maximum ticket size cap. I have a BT out cap. I have incremental yields, which will be much higher than what an urban or an emerging A will be giving to me. So as we move ahead, I think this strategy of ours, which is going to play a big role in defining how Aadhaar is going to maintain its current levels of spreads or even BT out for that matter.
Got it. Rishi sir, just a request. I mean, would you be able to share the yield difference, let's say, between urban and emerging A, B, C? I mean, there will be 40-50 basis point of rate difference with each location, or how is it?
While I will, this is, as I told you, effective 1st April, but I will indicatively give you the differential in yields overall. You can just bear with me for a second.
Sure, sir.
Ranish, we'll come back to you. We'll just pull it and we'll come back during the call and we can take up the next questions if you don't mind.
Yeah, we will give you in this call only. Just give us a moment. We can move to the next question and come back to you. Thanks, Ranish.
So, second question again is on the asset quality. So, obviously, this quarter we have seen a pretty sharp recovery. But when we look at the stage 2 assets, you know, that has been steadily increasing with it stacking at 4% as on March 25 versus 3.8 December quarter and 3.6 last quarter last year. So is there any specific reason or, I mean, this is just a quarterly moment here and there?
I think honestly, Ranish, we should not read too much into the stage 2. Honestly, as a company, we have been a company which shows lower NPA and higher stage 2 always. There's also one more thing which I would want to say, because included in stage 2 is some of our assets which were one-time restructuring we had done at the time of COVID. So on a this basis, what you call it, conservative basis, we provide provision of 10% and we also show them at stage 2 though they are stage 1 assets. So the impact of that is anywhere between 0.6 and 0.7%. So of the total stage 2 that you are seeing, of 4%, about 0.6 to 0.7% will pertain to assets which are actually stage 1, but we show it under stage 2 because we carry a stage 2 provision as per RBI mandate of 10%. It's about 4 years since restructuring has happened on account of OTR. So probably somewhere in FY26, we may take a view or a call of moving this back into stage 1.
Got it. But all these accounts are regularly paying accounts, basically.
Yeah, this 0.6% to 0.7% which I mentioned are actually stage 1 in terms of actual DPD, but I classify it under stage 2 for the purpose of reporting.
Got it.
Okay, Ranish, if I can now, I have that data on your yields that you had required. If I can indicatively tell you, your urban locations yields will be in the range of 12%. Your emerging
ABC, as I told you, will be in the range of 14% to 16%.
Got it. Okay.
And that's how the combined 13.5, 13.6 is.
And as Rishi said, the reason of us going on the emerging A, B, and C is primarily to ensure that our next year yields also fall into the same range as we exited in the current financial year. So we would like to maintain yields at similar levels as we end up, maybe a minus 5 to 6 bits is fine, but otherwise we would like to maintain at similar levels.
Got it, got it. Now this is actually very, very helpful, and this is what, you know, sort of we wanted to get a sense of yields. Thank you very much, sir, and best of luck, sir.
Thank you, Ranish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yash from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking the question. Sir, on the borrowing side of the almost, you know, 79-80% of the floating rate borrowings, can we get the split on how, on like what's the benchmark they are linked to, and what could be the quantum of improvement which we can see in sort of 1Q of FY26?
So if you look at it on the total bank borrowings or even on the total borrowings, if you see, about 18% of them will be linked to short-term rates like repo or T-bill. So out of, for example, let's take the bank borrowing. Out of the total bank borrowing, approximately 18% is linked to either repos or T-bills, where obviously the pass-on will be almost immediate. For example, out of the total bank borrowings, one-year MCLR is 20%. And six-month MCLR would be 30%, and 3 months will be a further 30%. So in that sense, it is widely distributed, and only about 18% is where we get immediate benefit. The bigger benefit will obviously start coming in when the MCLR starts moving. And what we have seen is that two rate cuts have happened, and we have not seen much movement in the MCLR. So honestly, I do not see MCLR moving the needle so much at the end of 1Q. Maybe it is in quarter two that we will see some movement in MCLR, which will happen as a pass back to us. Maybe MCLR headline of the banks may change, but by the time it gets passed on to us, depending on whether we come into a 3, 6 or 12 month MCLR resets, probably we will see it happening somewhere in quarter two. As far as the interest rate drops are concerned, I think a lot of public experts have spoken on that. And as and when the drop happens, approximately 18% benefit comes immediately to us. In terms of fixed and floating, as I said, approximately 74-75% of my assets are also floating. And we calculate RPLR on a continual basis. And as and when the RPLR needs to get passed on, as per the mandate of the ALCO and the board, we will pass it on to the customers. So we don't see much of a benefit on any movement in interest rate, because our borrowing floating and our asset floating are more or less on a matched basis.
Okay, so basically from 2Q onwards, you could see some meaningful drop in borrowings, but it might get offset with yields.
And yes, to be very honest, you may have a lag effect before we get a benefit and we may pass it on. But beyond that, I don't think neither we are building anything internally also on that.
Got it. And so second on the asset quality, more from the, you know, MFI exposure, I believe in the last call also we have indicated around 9,000-10,000 customers with MFI, you know, overlap. And now with, you know, the Tamil Nadu thing coming in, so any risk to the customers there? I believe we have around 56 or 57 branches in there. So anything incremental from the states we could see, given the MFI exposure?
Yes, yes, you're right. Our numbers were about 9,000 odd customers, 9,096 customers who had MFI exposure. That number has dropped to about 7,077 customers now. So loans have been foreclosed. As regards Tamil Nadu, I think it is too early to read, what is going to happen. Yes, we have branches. As we speak today, things are perfectly okay. Our recovery efforts, wherever applicable, are completely online. The complete support from the government machinery, like the DMs or the police, wherever assistance required, has been coming in even as close as today morning. So we don't see any issue happening as we move ahead.
Got it. That's it, sir, from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yash.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal from Asian Market Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir, and congrats on the quarter. Just I had one question on the yields. So when we look at it as percentage of average assets, it has come down to 12.8%. So there is some drop. But the reported numbers, you know, they stand pretty much similar, you know, at 13.9%. So what kind of explains this difference?
I think, to be very honest, I would want to see the number that you're quoting, 12.8. I wouldn't be able to. So if you can, we can take that offline and you can probably share it with us, and we'll be more than happy to help you on that.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Kumar Jain from Alpha Accurate. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congrats for strong set of numbers. In disbursement and the AUM side, what is your growth target for FY26?
So, Abhishek, in terms of growth targets or, you know, guidance, we will maintain our AUM guidance of 20-21%. Disbursement guide growth of about 18-19% and a PAT of about 20-21%.
And on the NPA front, we believe that we should be at around 101.10-1.15%.
That's right.
And from where you are targeting this much of growth, basically on the emerging market or in your existing?
So our primary growth is going to come from emerging markets. As I explained in the previous caller, during the previous caller, emerging is going to contribute higher composition of our growth.
And what is the current urban versus rural mix of your loan?
55 urban. So current split of the current book, one is we don't do rural. Huh? Yes, Abhishek, just to clarify. We do, you know, only urban. Urban and emerging split, I can tell you, is about 55% current is from the urban locations and the balance is from the emerging locations. And we would look at maintaining, you know, 55% should eventually in a couple of years should go to about from emerging and 45% from urban. So it will reverse, you know, as we move ahead.
And how is the demand situation urban versus rural at this point of time in affordable housing?
So demand, whether it is urban or whether it is emerging, not rural again, is emerging is more or less similar. It is, you know, it is all about how do we reach there, where is competition playing a larger role. For example, in urban locations, competitors will play a larger role. And the moment you move to emerging ABC kind of locations that I just explained, the competitive intensity goes down. Hence, you know, the probability of higher conversion ratios applies in emerging locations.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's all from my side.
Most welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Siraj Khan from Ascendant Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. I'm audible?
Yes, Siraj, you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity and a good set of numbers. So, sir, the first question is with regards to the credit cost. Credit cost for Q4 was elevated. I mean, compared to YOY, last year Q4 we had the recovery, negative number. This year we have a positive number. So, wanted to know, were there any write-offs, elevated write-offs, technical write-offs of that sort?
No, this is not the account of write-off. As was asked by one of the analysts, this is primarily because of the movement of one stage two. Because stage two, if you look at it on a year-on-year basis, would have moved by about 30-40 bps. And second is basically your standard asset provision would have increased because the AUM increases significantly in quarter four. Last year the stage two improvement was fairly significant in quarter four versus quarter three. That is why there was a reversal of provision in quarter four. This year, that much benefit didn't flow through in terms of stage two improvement. And that is why we are seeing a small credit cost of about 5-6 crores going into the P&L.
Okay, so in Q4, we did not have any write-offs specifically.
There will be standard write-offs, which, for example, if we sell an asset, for example, if there's a haircut of 10% on an asset sale, that 10% write-offs will happen. We have not taken any additional provisional write-off or prudential write-off, which we take. Normally, we take prudential write-off once a year. We have not done anything of that sort in quarter four.
Okay. So, I just wanted that number. So, what was the Q4 write-off and the FY25 write-off?
This would be approximately 8 to 9 crores in quarter four.
And full year?
Full year would 32 crores would be in the full year.
32 crores. Okay. That's for the asset quality. One question, another that I had was on the sourcing specifically in the southern region. So many of the peers that I have seen that is there in the southern market, they have seen that Tamil Nadu market has seen a little bit of a slowdown. Karnataka is also facing some issues. Even Madhya Pradesh, there were some NBFC showing that there is some tremors of very, very low level this thing. There is some asset quality issues. Are we seeing anything in these markets, Madhya Pradesh or maybe southern area, anywhere in any across of our states, we see some asset quality issues, maybe early signs in 30 DPDs, 60 DPDs, anything of that sort?
So since you mentioned, Siraj, certain states, Tamil Nadu, we are not seeing any issue. As I see the numbers, Karnataka, no issue. Andhra Pradesh on a growth trajectory, Tamil Nadu on a growth trajectory. The states, and if you recall my last, in the last quarter also, I mentioned the states which historically have been a poor credit behavior, continue to be poor credit behavior, which is typically east of the country. You have Kerala. They continue to be that. Madhya Pradesh, again, growth trajectory, complete growth trajectory, no early indications from any of the states that you mentioned. Neither in bouncing, any indication, negative indications, nor in 1+, nor in NPA.
Great. And finally, on the OPEX. So, year-on-year, cost to income has also come down. So what are the drivers that we will get this further lower? What is the target with respect to both cost to income and OPEX to AUM?
I think when we reduce 120 bips of cost to income, I think I had said that we want to reduce 150 bips in 2 years, to be very honest. And we already done about 120 bips in year one. I think, to be very honest, next year we will have around a 30 to 50 bips sort of a drop in cost to income. The driver over here predominantly is that majority of our expansion has already happened. And the incremental expansions that we do, about 50-60 branches expansion that we do, about 60-65% of the branch expansion will happen in emerging B and C, which are smaller offices, and where the cost of OPEX of setting up these offices is predominantly lower. And the remaining 30-35% will happen in the bigger offices. And the second thing is, obviously, since we have invested significantly 3-4 years back in data analytics as well as in technology, that benefit of that is seen right across the company, whether it is sourcing, whether it is credit, the number of files that they can handle, technical in terms of turnaround time. So basically the sheer productivity, not only of the sales guys, but also of the non-sales guys has stepped up. So that is the reason that for the incremental 100 rupees of business, the OPEX that I had to probably put in 3 years ago is not the same. Obviously, we are seeing benefits of productivity. And that is a driver that we constantly work on, whether it is frontline sales productivity or productivity right across all the business support functions.
Understood. That was the detail. Just a few statistics if you could provide. What was the login to sanction and the sanction to disbursement ratio for the year? And the files per officer.
Files per officer or volume per officer?
Yes.
Okay, that's the third number I will try and pick up. But login to sanction for the year was, 1 second, just give me a moment. Yes, okay. So login to sanction was 60% and sanction to disbursement was 62%.
Okay, and the corresponding last year number, if that is readily available, could that be done?
The previous year, it was the login to sanction was 61.8 in FY24. In FY25, it is 60. Sanction to disbursement was 62.5, and in 25 it is 62. So more or less similar in terms of numbers.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And the volume per employee, the officer, the file number, if possible.
Oh, for the sales, right? For the sales,
yes.
It is 1.1 file per sales officer.
Sales officer. Okay. Yeah. But that was very helpful. I'll join back in.
This is for the frontline sales.
Yes, yes, and the ROs, so you are speaking about, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. You got it right, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunities. As on credit rating, how is the conversation with the credit rating agencies on possibility of credit rating upgrade? That is my first question, and then I have some data keeping questions.
Okay, so credit rating, as also informed Nidesh earlier, we are engaged. We are already engaged with both the credit rating agencies. And I don't foresee that this rating upgrade should be prolonged for too long, while obviously it is a decision that will be taken at their management level or the rating committee level. But we've had good rounds of meetings even as last 15 days. So that's the update.
Sure. So because in terms of size and other financial metrics, we are doing quite well, and we have also reached across 25,000 crore of size. So.
That's what both the rating agencies also tell us, yeah. So meaning, you know, I will leave it up to their judgment.
Second, yeah, if you can share incremental yields and incremental ticket size, loan size for Q4, incremental yields and incremental loan size.
Incremental yields has come in around 13.45, and incremental ticket size on a blended basis is 13 lakhs. So HL is about 15 lakhs and 9 lakhs is non-home loan.
And the, in terms of sourcing mix for the full year or for the quarter, if you can share the sourcing mix between in-house, DSA and connectors.
The split I will pull out, but broadly if I can tell you, in-house, which used to be 59% last year, has dropped to 54%, which was 54% last year, has grown to 59%. So almost 60% is now in-house. And the balance is external, split between DSAs and connectors here.
So of the 41%, your corporate DSA would be in the range of about 25%.
That's
the
right.
Balance would be what we call connectors.
Connectors only retail.
Retail DSA. A point that we wanted to mention over here is our Aadhaar Mitra program, which if you remember, we have been always talking about it for the last 3-4 years. We have seen good traction in our Aadhaar Mitra offtake, and the disbursement contribution by Aadhaar Mitra now is still almost touching 30% for FY25. To put it into perspective, in FY22, it was about 22%, and FY24, it was again about 22%. So there has been a significant movement both in the number of Aadhaar Mitras that we have and the contribution that Aadhaar Mitras are making to the overall disbursement mix. As you would know, Aadhaar Mitra is only a referral model where the case is actually closed by my internal sales team, and hence these are all counted as internal businesses.
Okay, so 60% in 59% internal includes Aadhaar Mitra. Or?
Yeah, yeah, Aadhaar Mitra is a referral program of providing leads to my internal channel. It is just a lead provider.
Sure. And the last question is that if you look at 1.15 per sales officer, what are the steps we are taking to improve this? Because this productivity, I think, for an industry level, it's also the productivity is broadly here only. So, when, let's say, we want to build a 50,000 crore book, etc., this could become a bit of a constraint for reaching that particular scale, because then we will require thousands of employees. So how are we thinking about improving this productivity?
See, this the direct correlation of this 1.1 file per sales officer is linked to the attrition rate of the company. So, and we've realized that, and we understand the data, we understand the psyche of our front-end employees. We have launched multiple programs of right from handholding to internal schemes of the growth trajectory, etc., just to ensure, and we've seen early positive results, at least in the last 3 quarters that we've been doing this, you know, attrition rates have dropped. The moment the attrition rates drop, And if I were to look at numbers in the current quarter or the last month, for example, they have gone up, I will not say substantially, but you can see a trajectory moving northwards. So it is directly correlated to attrition. We have started addressing attrition, which will eventually lead to a higher file per RO.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek M. from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I'm audible. Hello.
Audible, yeah, please.
Yeah, hi, thank you. So thanks for taking my question. Can you give a sense of the balance transfer that you are seeing? So how much is getting emptied out right now? And has that increased or remained the same over the last, say, 1 year?
So, Abhishek, our balance transfer out annualized for March is 6.49%. Which has dropped from a previous year. Previous year it was 6.93%. So from a 6.93, it has dropped to 6.49%.
So this is on the number of files. So if you are holding 100 files, 6.9 are getting BT'd out, or 6.4. Or is it from value?
This is AUM value.
AUM basis, right. So see, as per my understanding, a lot of larger HFCs are trying to build an affordable housing book, and they are trying to approach customers who have been with you and, you know, your peers for 2-3 years, good track record, and they are able to offer lower rates, you know, given their own lower cost of funds and OPEX and all that. So is that not increasing in instance, and that is why your BT out rate is coming down, or is it some calculation thing that is contributing to this? I just wanted to understand how you are able to retain that these many customers, you know, when so, competition from large peers is increasing.
Yeah, so there are multiple things, Abhishek, that, you know, plays around when BT out is spoken about. One is internally we have taken multiple measures, right, from having a centralized retention team to data analytics contributing to towards you know, highlighting the consumer as red, yellow, red, green, and amber, etc. So there are multiple things from a data analytics perspective that has gone to the retention team. It's a centralized retention team operating out of Mumbai. So any customer across 500 across 600 branches approaches a branch for a BT out is immediately redirected. We understand the reason of his BT out. If it is yield, good customer, green tagged customer, we look at our own spreads and accordingly maybe, you know, look at the customer. If he needs top up, based on our policy, we look at top up. That is one. Second is, you know, while you mentioned large housing finance companies, etc., everybody has a certain risk appetite. We, as we understand, there are certain large companies who are not very comfortable with a certain CRIF score. There are companies which are not comfortable with self-employed, no income proof underwriting. There are certain large housing finance companies not comfortable with the kind of properties my consumer buys. It is a mix of a lot of things. You know, a generic statement that one large company can come and take up your BT. No, it's not, it doesn't work like this. It is a combination of all these three things. Third, you know, when we talk about larger companies looking at our consumers, this is primarily going to happen only, or is happening, I would say, primarily in the emerging A and urban locations. And that's why our shift in strategy, okay, in emerging B, C, you know, so that is going to balance out completely. And that is actually already, you can see the numbers, you know, panning out. For example, you know, versus the last year, as I quoted, almost a 7% of our BT out has fallen to about 6%, 6.5% today.
Sure. Thanks for that. That was very comprehensive.
You will have, and also that's how.
Yeah. So another quick question on your sourcing mix. So you explained that almost 59-60% internal and the rest is, you know, through your channel partners. Even in an internal, you have, you know, these Aadhaar Mitras. Can you sort of pinpoint which is the fastest growing channel? Is it Aadhaar Mitras? And that's because you've added a lot of Aadhaar Mitras and that is helping the growth to 54 going to 59, entirely driven by that. Or, you know, you rely more on your internal teams as well.
Yeah, so my fastest growing two channels, Abhishek, are Aadhaar Mitra and my direct sourcing. Both of them combined are the fastest growing channels for me today.
Understood. Okay. Sure, sir, sure. Thank you so much for those two answers. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. The next question.
Thank you, Abhishek.
The next question is from the line of Parth from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, so congratulations on a good quarter, sir. So just two basic questions. You mentioned that the share of emerging markets is going to improve going ahead to 55% from the current levels of 45%. And we also see good traction in the non-home loan segment. So do you see any incrementally improving impact on the yields with the growth in these two segments and geographies? And apart from that, since you'll be growing in the emerging market segment, can we expect some improvement in the share of self-employed customers and EWS LIG customers, and whether this will have any detrimental impact on the credit costs? That could be it.
Yeah, I think as we explained, overall the strategy of moving into or splitting the business into emerging and urban and emerging 1, 2, 3 is to maintain the healthy yields that we currently have. So I think the idea is to maintain the yields that we currently have. To be very honest, we don't expect the yields to grow significantly from where we are currently. Maintenance of the yields itself is a fair achievement. Whatever benefit we get from emerging B and C is where the yields will be slightly more stronger. If the business of that starts growing significantly in year 1 and in year 2, that is where you may see some traction. But for that, we also have urban locations where competition will be high. So it's a sort of a set off that we have. That's why I'm saying holding yields is a fair assumption. The second question that you had was on
consumer profile. See, consumer profile, what is going to happen is as we move ahead in this strategy, our self-construction business will go up, our self-employed business will go up, because the more you focus on emerging B and C locations, that these are smaller district centers where more of self-employed customers are available, which gives us an upside on, you know, managing. So what are we trying to protect by doing broadly? If I can give you a couple of points. One is we are trying to protect our ticket size. You know, emerging locations, urban locations where the ticket size moves northward, cost of construction is high, cost of labor is high, so on and so forth. And the emerging locations, the cost of construction is comparatively lower, so I will be able to manage my ticket size. And as Rajesh explained, urban locations, you will have, you know, slight contraction on yields, on spreads, whereas in emerging locations, that's where you will be able to manage. So a complete balance on ticket size and complete balance on spreads is what urban and emerging is going to give me.
Sure, sir. That is helpful, sir. Just another question was on the fact that since you will be going in the emerging segments, will you see a rise in the EWS and LIG income group, and will it impact on, have any impact on the credit cost side?
Okay, first let me clarify to everybody on the call, including Parth, you, that we are already in these locations. We are not going to these locations. What I have done is I have split my 600 branches where I am available today into two categories. So I am not that I am going to venture out into new locations. From a pure strategic and control perspective, ticket size perspective, yield perspective, I have just distributed not only the branches but even my teams. You know, I am trying to put the best and the strongest team on the emerging side, because urban locations are more or less on auto mode right now. So that's what I'm doing. So will my credit cost enhance because of this? No, it will not, because this is the business that I've already been doing.
Sir, that is helpful. And just one last question. So your top states like Rajasthan, UP, Maharashtra, and even Madhya Pradesh is now at 11%. Sorry, not Madhya Pradesh, Gujarat. So do you plan to change your threshold of maintaining per state AUM at just 14% to a bit of a higher threshold once you start seeing improved growth in the states?
No, we will. We have, as management, we have strategically decided that whether it is distribution, whether it is incremental disbursement or whether it is AUM, we will not breach the 14% mark.
Oh, okay.
Maybe you know, 50 basis here and there, 14.5. But that's okay. The range we will be around.
Okay. Thank you. This was very helpful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last question for today, which is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Apologies, I joined in late, so I'm not sure if this has been discussed already. I wanted to understand how much liquidity are you holding on balance sheet right now in terms of 3 months, 6 months, what is it right now? What was it in FY24? Where would we want to keep it? And if any benefit can come through or from reducing this on our spreads, sorry, on our margins, etc. So some commentary on that, please. Thank you.
So our overall liquidity that we had at the year end stood at about 2200 crores, which is approximately 10% of the loan book. And if you look at it at March end last year, it would have been on a similar line. So typically what happens is in intervening quarters, this typically is in the range of about 8 to 9%. And at the end of the year, it becomes 10% because there are significant drawdowns which happen at the end of the quarter, which gets utilized in the start of the next quarter. Typically, what we would like to keep it is we would like to keep this in the levels of about 8% to be very one. And to be very honest, we would like to measure that more as a percentage of borrowing mix. So we would like to keep somewhere about 8 to 9% of the borrowing mix. Obviously, this gets decided by the ALCO in terms of the liquidity in the market. If the liquidity becomes tight, we would like to keep it at a higher percentage. Otherwise, 8 to 9% is balance sheet liquidity. On top of that, we will always have undrawn lines. For example, on balance sheet liquidity was 2200 crores. We also had undrawn lines of about 900 crores.
Got it. So broadly then you are pretty much in range and this will not really dramatically shift from where we are right now, right?
Yeah, this may give you a release of about 1-2% to be very honest,
yeah,
but they're not,
yeah,
not significant.
Got it. This is very useful. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as this was the last question for today, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thanks a lot. I think I thank all the participants for joining in, and I would like to apologize also for uploading the presentation a bit late. We had some problems at the site for upload, so we will ensure that next time at least we give you a slightly more bigger lead time for reading the presentation. I hope all the questions have got answered. If there are any unanswered questions, you can always reach out to the investor relations mail ID, and we'll be happy to answer questions. Thanks a lot and have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of JM Financial Institutional Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.